So here's a guy that I remember being in front of a classroom and having to pitch something and physically getting sick. And years later, I see you in front of hundreds of people doing stand-up comedy.
Thousands of people.
Thousands of people. How the hell are you, Sean?
I'm not too bad, man. I didn't get physically sick. I just nearly passed out because I wasn't breathing.
Because you were nervous.
Oh, man, I was shit scared. I'm still a bit shit scared.
You know, but I don't have a problem in front of people. But when I saw you on stage in front of that huge crowd doing stand-up, you sent me a video years ago.
Well, like Raw or something?
Yeah, something like that. I got nervous. And I don't know whether I was nervous because it was you or nervous because I was picturing myself on that on that stage. How does someone go from getting physically sick, standing in front of 30 people, to stand-up comedy in front of 1,000 people? Just tell me about that. That's what I'm interested in.
Well, lots of alcohol to start with.
Serious?
The first time I did it at Rawhide around the corner.
Right.
Hyde Park Hotel. The show was called Rawhide. It was six people. And my mate for a year was like, just go up and do it, just go up and do it. And like, as you said, I was fucking petrified. And I went up there and I had about 9 jugs before I went up there. And even then, like, the adrenaline was still, so I was still kind of sober by the time I went up there. And did my shtick and killed it to 6 or 7 people and, just caught the bug from there.
What was that like? When you say you caught the bug, what was that feeling? And did you plan that stand-up that you did then? Or was it more of an improv?
Yeah. Well, I had the year just to think, because it's all that negative bullshit. You know, oh, man, this is shit. Oh, they're going to hate this, rah-rah. This isn't funny, rah-rah. But it was all rehearsed and well prepped and stuff.
And then after that, you wanted to do more of it?
Yeah, well, as soon as I got off stage, I was kind of like, man, I can do this stuff forever. Like, it was just like that sort of... I don't know. It was just a weird feeling of like, this is... So I've played around with a bunch of stuff, played footy and, basketball and tried music and all sorts of stuff. But like that moment was just kind of like,
what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, like I found it's weird, like my calling. I've always tried to be like a bit of a class clown sort of thing. So I thought this was like a nice...
In class, I remember you as quite an introverted guy, quiet... Bit insecure.
Do you remember the kids in our class? They're all talking about some of the most obscure movie references, and I felt like the biggest idiot in the world. Like, what was that famous one with like that black and white movie?
I can't remember.
And it was
Man Bites Dog. Nah, I can't.
Nah, this is like black and white 40s,
right?
Oh, Fellini.
Oh, it could have been a Fellini film.
Movies.
Yeah.
And I was, what the fuck are you talking about, Fellini? And then I was like, oh yeah, I know that scene. That's what they did in Bill and Ted.
So you referenced that to Bill and Ted.
Yeah, so it was like, felt not out of my depth, but like I felt like I was in a room full of way smarter people than
and
I
that's
am.
Why you sort of went inwards a little bit?
Maybe, yeah.
So from the six people, what happened after that?
Well, I did a comedy competition like a week later, and because I like the dark material and stuff, I did a gig and I offended the crowd that much that I needed to be walked to my car, which was pretty fun.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's fun as like an open mic and stuff, but now it's just like, it was just terrible material.
So that was your second gig?
Oh, I was probably in the top 10.
Okay.
First 10, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we're like the United States. Do we have that sort of social justice warriors here, that war that's going on here? It's not to the extent of America, because I think Australians are a little bit more... right.
No, there is a bit of that social justice warrior sort of stuff.
But comedy, you can get away with it. And I think that's what you've got to push because it's getting a little bit too much.
It's also a lot of unfunny people telling you how to be funny or people that I don't find your comedy funny, but you want to lecture me about other people's comedy. You know what I mean? Like it's all right being a social justice warrior, but like your job is to be funny. So, like, don't be fucking lecturing other people about what's what and stuff. But at the same time, I can kind of understand it, but at the same time, it's just like, shut the fuck. You're just regurgitating shit you've seen on Twitter. Like,
that's right.
You know.
So from that, when you had to be escorted to your car, I'm trying to get in your world, right?
Yeah. Man, I'm trying to dig up all the old memories of all the horrible shit that's happened.
No, but like you had to get escorted to your car. When you were going home, were you thinking, that's what I'm going to do? I'm going to push this shit as far as I can. Or I've got to start reworking some material because it's maybe not the way I want to go.
No, I think my only thought was, tonight was a rough one. That was about it. That was the only thought, you know, it was just like, oh, today was a shit day. You know, I don't think I've ever been 100% on what I want. I just like playing with the medium. Like, just friends just gone. I just did a show as like an Eastern European character just to try my hand at like character comedy. So yeah. I'm still not, I don't want to say that I figured out what I'm all about yet, but like I'm throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks and just having fun along the way.
From what I have heard, I think it could take, like any art form, it takes years to sort of find that voice on where you are.
Yeah, it's a 10-year apprenticeship, they say.
Is it?
Yeah. So at the 10-year mark, you find you got a rough idea of what your voice is and what your style and stuff like that. And then 10 to 20 years is where you kind of really start smashing it out.
How do you define your style? Like, why do you think people come to your shows?
Well, they don't so far, if you saw my Fringe sales, but
no, but Fringe was pretty low this year all round.
Yeah.
There was a headline in the paper today saying, why did Fringe 2020 fail?
I've got a rough idea on that, but it's for another time. What was the question? What's my style?
Yeah, like why do you think people come to see you?
We're going back to that political correctness sort of stuff where people say, oh, you shouldn't talk about this, you shouldn't talk about that, you can't make that funny, you can't make that funny. Like to me, that's just kind of like, oh, just hold on a sec. Let me just have a play around with it and see what I can come up with and stuff. So, you know, like last year, maybe the year before, I was working, like writing a bunch of pro-gun material. I found a decent hook, which I was pretty happy with. Yeah.
Especially coming from an Australian.
Well, that was the joke was about, you know how hard it is to shoot someone in this country? It sucks.
True.
Yeah. But yeah, I just like dabbling. And I think I just scratched the surface where it's enough that as a regular audience member, you know what I'm talking about, but don't get too deep into the topic that it becomes meta, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you carry around a notebook with you?
No.
So what goes through your mind during the day? And do you have specific times you get home and you're like, I'm going to put this stuff down?
No, procrastination's like one of my number one enemies, man. It's a killer. So, no, with ideas, it's usually just like a spark of an idea and then I kind of build on that. But like there's a, Joe Rogan talks about it a lot. There's a book called The War on Art.
I've got it here.
Well, he said, there was one that stuck out for me and it was, do you write when you're inspired or are you inspired when you write? And the quote was, I write when I'm inspired and I'm inspired at 9 a.m. every morning. It's just saying if you do the work, the shit will come out when you have to. And I've done that plenty of times where you're just sitting there, you know, you're there to write just one dumb dick joke and then you get 30 dick jokes. So it's all good.
And then you got to pick which one. Which
no, you just all make it into a big dick story. So it's
with 30 of them.
Yeah.
So you don't really have a time at the moment?
No, I want to because, you know, my life's pretty hectic at the moment. So that's probably one of the things I'm trying to overcome. Is just that procrastination.
Yeah.
I'll get to it when I get to it sort of thing. Because when you get to it, it's nearly game time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I think it's a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's just, I think, getting yourself into that habit and forcing yourself. You know, it's like the fitness guy, you know, going to the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something you wake up and go, oh, I can't wait when you first begin. Because there's endorphins there.
It sounds like we're talking about my self-help, you know, library man. I've got a book all about it's all about creating new habits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've got the same library at home.
Do you find when you are busier you get more shit done?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people find that really, like when they have all the time, it's harder to get disciplined. But when you've got five things happening at once, you tend to like you're on that adrenaline run anyway. So you get stuff done. You get stuff done, you know?
Yeah, well, I find when it's game day, I can get the work done in the sense that, you know, when I'm in the middle of it, like it's when it has to be done, I can get it done. But then it kind of makes you feel like shit, like, well, it feels good in this period of time that I did it. Imagine if I had the whole time that I did do it, I could have, you know, really smashed it out of the park, which it's, you know, a double-edged sword sort of thing.
Yeah.
So.
So what was, do you remember the first big crowd you played to? And what sort of numbers are we talking about?
Well, when I started, Shapiro's was like the biggest open mic in Perth, and that was 100, like 90 to 100. Like it's an experimental room. So like they're right. all, everyone there knows it's there for comedy. So it's, they're super forgiving and super energetic. So you go out there and you've just, you know, it's your third time on stage. They make you feel like a superstar. So. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And they're there to have a good time as
Yeah, absolutely.
You must get a few assholes in the crowd, some hecklers.
Dude, I get a few assholes in the green room. Like, there's assholes everywhere, man. Don't just blame the audience.
I've heard that some comedians have this sort of rhetorical comeback, or they have this comeback when they get a heckle already prepared. And some people just go, well, yeah, I just go with the flow. Do you have anything like that?
No, but I do love the old school. I don't come to your workplace and knock the dicks out of your mouth. Like all those old school ones, yeah. You know. Chris Franklin has a good one. When people are talking to the crowd, where'd you learn to whisper in a helicopter? It's just so fucking dumb. But, you know, there's like the old school guys, they're all like there's like a charming part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you got to kind of learn that charm. At the start, it's just like, you shut the fuck up. But yeah. Now, like, you're kind of a bit more confident, you're more in it, you can actually, like, engage the crowd. A
bit more charisma.
Stuff. Well, speaking of hecklers, I had my 100% show at Fringe. There was a lady there and she was, like, started, like, macking out with her boyfriend in the front row. And so I obviously wanted to talk to her. She's like, oh, I forget how we got onto it, but she goes, I do black magic. And then on the other side of the room were a bunch of Wiccas. And they start arguing with each other, like, you're not a real witch, you're not a real fucking witch. And then I was just like, black man, like, because I grew up with, like, Sabrina and all that shit. I want to fucking know more about this shit. And then she wouldn't answer any of my questions. And then at the end of the show, she goes, if you keep asking me about black magic, you're going to find out about it. I'm like, are you threatening me with black magic right now? It was, like, the fucking coolest. It wasn't scary because it was
good
just
subject.
You know, she was just kind of like oogity boogity to me. Like, I mean, I've had a lot of threats. That's probably the funniest one I ever got.
I think whenever you're in the spotlight, you'll get threats.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Mahoney, as you know, I mean, I got physical threats after that podcast.
From who?
On Instagram. If we ever see you in the street, we talked about nothing really. Like, we didn't insult anyone. We just gave our opinions on organized religion.
Oh,
no, but we didn't go to any extent in that way. And I couldn't believe it. So what I did is I did a poster of me and him and I wrote this talking about we didn't mean to offend anyone, but ideas are meant to be discussed and, you know, and talked about. But thank you to the extra 7,000 because all of a sudden when that picture went out, there were thousands more coming on and listening. Because
yeah.
They must, you know, it's controversial and they're like, who the hell is this guy?
Who do you want to get threats from this time around? Who do you want to, I've got opinions, a lot of opinions on a lot of people. Who do you want to piss off?
Let's go for the social justice warriors.
Okay, my favourite.
Now, do you find you get away with a lot more because you're Australian?
No, what do you mean?
You've been to the States, right?
Yeah.
Did you do a stand-up over there?
Yeah.
Do you find you get away with a bit more because you're Australian?
Probably not so much in California. California is like where all the best of the best. You know, LA and New York, that's where all the best go. So it was kind of like, I don't give a fuck what you were. You know, just go up and be funny.
Yeah.
Vegas, I did a black room in Vegas, which.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, man, that was the best show of my life, man. And that was only like 12 people in a strip club. But like when like black Americans laugh, they laugh with the whole body. So like
yeah.
It felt like a 1,000-seat room, just like 12 dudes
just
laughing.
Just enjoying it.
Yeah, man. Because I'd bombed in every gig I did in California. And I was doing big rooms as well, you know, like the Comedy Store. Yeah, man. Comedy Store La Jolla, Ice House, like all the big ones. And got nothing the whole week I was there. And like that was the dream, was to move there. So it was just like, oh, fuck, man, like that dream's over sort of thing. And then I went to Vegas and then just got that reception and I was just like, America's where I'm meant to be. And then I went to Atlanta and performed every night there and that was one of the best times of my life, man. Hot scene, cool comedians, just a cool city. Like, yeah, I fucking loved it, man.
And how are the other comedians there? Are they pretty open when you get there to sort of socialize and get to know you a bit, or do they keep to themselves?
It's just like anything, man. Like, I mean, you've done filmmaking and stuff. You get pretentious fucking actor people, and you get actors that are like just the real deal, cool, sort of thing. Yeah. Mm. So, and it's the same with comedy, man. A lot of delusional people think they're way better than they are, and a lot of really good comedians that don't have the confidence to admit how good they are, you know. Yeah. So it's like,
well, I think everyone should bomb.
Yeah.
I think you learn a lot. It's like a boxer. You know, I think a boxer should lose and then come back. He knows what that's like.
Well,
it's
not whether they should or shouldn't. It's just inevitable.
But you learn. You learn from that.
And like, bombing is like a weird thing. Like, there's proper stinkers, which I've had. And then there's like shows.
Stinkers as in crickets?
Well, I did a gig in Nimbin where I was bombing and I could literally hear the fucking crickets. It was just... Yeah, that was a, you know, I'm literally listening to crickets right now, man. It was horrible. But no, I did a gig in Geograph Bay and I just quit drinking. And because drinking was a big part of my comedy.
Comedy or the confidence to do comedy?
Both.
Oh, okay.
So I had to, you know, hold a beer on stage and stuff.
I saw that. I saw you going on quite a bit with a beer.
Like, and I used it for like pauses and all that, you know, amateur stuff. Once I quit, I did a gig in Geograph Bay and went down there and I bombed. I had a 15-minute, 20-minute spot and I was like, got the fuck out of there in like 5 minutes. I just had like a, not a meltdown, but like a really insecure, like, feeling, you know, like really out of my depth sort of thing. And it took about 3 months to really be able to start doing comedy to the level I was doing it without alcohol. Because it was like weird. Like, it was like that Talladega Nights thing where, like, what do I do with my hands? Like, it's just like I had the material, but like still learning how to do comedy as well. And the one thing I learned was, because I do a lot of dark material, people look at you as a drunk man, or he's just being a drunk, belligerent person saying like really nasty stuff. But you say it as when you're sober, it's like, oh, the dude's making some good points, you know.
And you noticed that difference?
Yeah, just like the vibe of the crowd, or the vibe and the feeling that I was getting from the crowd, yeah.
Do you get that vibe the minute you walk on stage of the crowd? Can you pick them? You know, like at the beginning of every show, you must walk on going, oh, this is going to be hard.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you see a crowd full of all old people, you're going to be like, I don't think my pedophile stuff is going to really work today. You know what I mean? So you kind of...
Or it might.
Well... They're getting it either way, so it doesn't matter.
Is that right?
Yeah, fuck, yeah. You know, I'm selling Sean Conway, not, you know,
I actually think the older people would be better with it.
Nah.
Depending on the age, because, you know, you got to remember in the 60s and all, and 70s, it's a taboo subject.
This is this identity politics you're talking about, Wayne. Just because they're old doesn't mean they give a fuck about pedo jokes or not. Like, it's, it's all the individual, man.
I'd target the elderly.
I went to one gig and I was speaking to this lady and she's like, oh, I've got like a 22-year-old son. And she looked about 22 and I did cry, like, I can't talk to you, you're like too pretty. And I kept doing it and there was about 6 women that I tried talking to in the crowd. They all had kids and they all looked like they were still nightclubbing and shit. It was the most insane thing, you know, and I'm up there being fat and ugly with a cowboy hat. It was rough.
When did the cowboy hat happen? Because you didn't start with it.
No. I got the cowboy hat because there's too many fat bearded dudes with baseball caps. So I was like, and plus, like, I like the Stetson and it was like a nice size. It's not too big.
It suits you.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, I don't mind. But then... You know, comedians giving you shit, you know, like Jabba the Hat and...
Really?
Yeah. Well, like, not giving you shit, like putting you down, but, you know, you're always riffing.
But, man, I got to say, you've lost heaps of weight.
Yeah, because I had that fight this year or last year.
You had an amateur fight?
Yeah, MMA.
No way.
Yeah. Did you know that?
I think you might have told me.
Yeah.
When we were at that Persian bar...
Oh, the hairy Persian?
The hairy Persian. Yeah. I think you might have told me there, but you've lost heaps of weight.
Yeah, I did a thing called Wimta Warrior where you you train for 22 weeks and at the end of the 22 weeks you fight someone in the class. But because I was still about 15, 20 kilos heavier than the next dude in class, I had to get a ring in. And this dude looked like he had about 10 amateur fights and about 1,000 unsanctioned fights. He was the meanest looking dude I've ever seen.
Were you more scared there or in front of your big crowd doing stand-up?
It was completely different. You know,
different
was,
energy.
Yeah, man. So, like, I've performed on big stage, but, like, I spew backstage and, you know, the butterflies and stuff. But once the bell rang and the dude was coming at me to knock me out, it's that time 1,000. It was fucking game day.
Adrenaline.
Yeah, man. And it felt like 10 seconds. It was only 90 seconds, but it still felt...
It's a 90-second fight? Oh, so it's a minute and a half, was it?
Yeah. But yeah, he just way too classy. And
what an experience, though, to as a psychological game going in there.
Yeah.
Did you go for a big crap backstage? Because a lot of people before fights do that.
No, I didn't do that. Because I had to make weight, so I had to lose like 15 kilos in a month. 15 or 17 kilos in a month, and there's no healthy way to lose.
That's crazy.
And yeah, so I did this thing called snake juice diet, which is
snake juice. That already sounds bad.
It's 2 liters of water, a teaspoon of bicarb soda, potassium chloride, and Himalayan rock salt. And so it's like water fasting, but when you have the snake juice instead of water, it replenishes all the salts that you've lost,
minerals and all of that.
Yeah, so.
And it worked?
Yeah, I mean, he fucked me up in 90 seconds, but at least I looked skinny.
So you got down to weight, did you?
Yeah, by half a kilo.
Holy crap. Yeah.
And then I was buying a new computer and I went to JB Hi-Fi and nearly fainted in the store and the guy gave me a discount. So
it's not all because bad. You nearly fainted?
Nearly fainted, yeah. So
it's not healthy. That's an incredibly large amount of weight to lose.
I think it's healthy if you do it for like 2 days.
Fasting.
Yeah, like short fasting. Yeah. Well, I was doing it for 6 days, eat one day, 6 days, eat one day. And I did that for a month.
So good achievement all around, mate. Is that why you have some of the MMA stuff on your site, on Facebook?
Yeah, because they're all my old coaches and stuff. Dan Williams, who's like a Muay Thai like machine. If you watch some of his videos on YouTube, like when he kicks, it just sounds like machine guns, man. And one of the nicest dudes you ever met, he's got a fight.
They all are, though.
And Jack Della and his brother, two of like the hardest men I've ever met, but they're like just big kids.
Marshmallows.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say marshmallows. But they're just like big, they're like just big kids when the soccer ball comes out just at the end of the match. Yeah, absolutely, man. So, yeah, they're a lot of fun.
But they look like what? Walnuts in a condom?
One does. The other one still looks like a model, but I don't think he's had enough fights yet. I think he'll start getting busted up
once
as well.
His nose gets broke. Yeah.
But no, they're awesome fighters, man.
Wicked. What I was going to ask you, when you were going into your first US stand-up in California, did you have any of those thoughts before going on like, fuck, I'm here. I always wanted to come here. Did that play on the nerves you bombed?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I'm in the comedy store. Good, I was staying with another comic, Ari Manis, who you should check out. He opens for like Theo Von and a bunch of other guys in the US. And he really helped like point me in the right direction. But like you go, the comedy store in West Hollywood it's Mecca. You know what I mean? Like it's Mecca for comedians. And, you know, I'm chilling outside with other comics, you know, kind of by myself, but like just, you know, people watching. I've got like Andrew Dice Clay next to me just talking shit. And like all the staff at the comedy store are all comics. You know, they're like the next wave of great comics.
I hear that, like the door guy and, that.
Well, the bartender is Punky Johnson. She's got a special on something. I'm not sure what platform
she's
on.
I know the name.
Yeah. She was the bartender and it's just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. So, did that play on your nerves?
Oh, absolutely, man. But then like once I was up there and I was bombing, I've read like Steve Martin's biography. I've read a bunch of comedians' biographies and they all talk about eating shit at the comedy store and it's just like, oh, I'm just like Steve Martin at the moment, you know.
Well, they all do.
The show that I was on, it was very much only comics in the crowd who were just all in their books like, wrap it up, man, I got to go up next. It was kind of like that vibe.
Is there that light at the back going on?
Yeah, there's a blue star to your left.
I was there.
Yeah. So when that's over, it's like, come on. I think I was there before Mitzi Shaw passed away, but
she was the legend, hey?
Yeah. And like, even like her advice now, you hear there's like podcasts about when she passed and people telling all Mitzi Shaw stories about, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld was on it and was like, get him off. He's not my type. And it's just like, he's not ready yet. Just all these horrific stories. And her catchphrase was, get to the point, which is trying to, like, what I'm trying to do with my jokes and stuff. You know, like, don't flander around with the setup too much. Like, fucking,
yeah,
just get to the point. Yeah.
What sort of study did you do, research did you do to do stand-up? Like, you know, when you first started, like, did you have to watch copious amounts of stand-up on YouTube? And
no, not really, man. Well, I've always liked it, man. You know, like, I grew up with Galaxy. Now, they used to have the comedy channel, and it used to have Just for Laughs, and you would see.
I remember that.
Yeah, so they would have like Jim Brewer doing his alcoholic bit, and then just a bunch of, you know, big name people from the time. I can't really think of them. Holtz, something Holtz was one.
Right.
And he used to like bite his nails and perform like that. Yeah.
What are the stand up comics that you look up to?
Well, in Australia or just.
All around.
I don't know. I like the outlaw sort of comedians, you know, like your Doug Stanhopes, Ari Shaffir, who's been in a lot of trouble lately. Oh, but then, like, you meet him in person.
Oh, you've met him?
Oh, yeah. Well, I used to open for Ari.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Like, Sean.
Yeah. We went and got Chinese, and he's like one of the nicest people.
Well, I've listened to his podcast on Joe Rogan and stuff, and he seems a really nice guy. And, but, you know, yeah, that thing with Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant and the Bert Kreischer thing.
Yeah.
About slipping him MTMA.
Oh, I just thought, oh, geez, you know, talk about pushing it. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. And he'll get back from that, you know.
Oh, fuck it, you know. L.A. was that hot pot, man. Mm. And plus it was L.A., Kobe Bryant, you know, Bloods and Crips. They're all – basketball's what they live for, man. So, you know, you're trashing like an icon, not of the city, but like of basketball around the world. It was.
I saw Snoop Dogg's rebuke that came back at him. You know, Snoop Dogg posted something, you know.
Yeah, but like, who gives a fuck, really? Yeah.
Well,
like,
at the end of the day, I mean, it is what it is, you know. But I think why I think comedy is so important is that you can push those voices that people just can't say in politics or whatever like that.
Yeah.
And it started to get a bit dangerous there after a while. You know, when it was a German comic that said something against the president of Turkey, like Erdogan. And Erdogan contacted Angela Merkel, who runs Germany, and said, look, he needs to be reprimanded.
Yeah. Man, and that shit's still going on in Asia.
The actual public went up in arms about that.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at that going, oh, this starts to get like this.
Yeah.
It's censorship everywhere.
It is and it isn't, you know what I mean? Like, it's for every push, there's a pull, you know what I mean? Mm. So, like, I mean, you can put all this censorship stuff on and it would just be like the MacArthur era of comedy, but then it just makes people easier to be the next Lenny Bruce. Like, yeah, it's true. You know, for every, you know, push, there's always a pull. You can keep fucking saying, oh man, you can't talk about that, you can't talk about that, but like, all the times you put these restraints on comedy, you just make shittier comics look good for breaking those barriers.
True. Do you look at some of the old school, like, I still remember buying the VHS of Eddie Murphy's Delirious.
Still one of the greatest albums, man.
Delirious, old Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, man. You know? When I was in Atlanta, I went to a record store and just brought, I think, like 20, 25 records. It cost me like nearly $300 to bring them back because they weighed down all my luggage and stuff. But like, just all the old ones, you know, like Mort Soul, you know, Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, Richard Pryor. Joan Rivers, you know, just the whole.
George Carlin, he was something special.
Just next level.
Like, you would literally just listen to him talk the truth.
Yeah.
And somehow he'd make it funny as well because of how absurd the world is getting.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Well, I like watching George Carlin's clean material, like where he's trying to be for TV. And even that's like next level. He's talking about flying on an aeroplane.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just super clean.
I remember that.
And it was just, you kind of look at whether stuff is clean or dirty, and not really. You, at the moment, you just look, is it good?
Yeah.
And that's at the end of the day, that's all that
matters.
Do
you look at world issues and then sort of go, this is how I feel? Or do you just, is it your day to day where you just go, this is funny?
I'll look at a topic long enough to find a bit, and then I stop caring about that topic, which is, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but, you know, I drive on being inspired and stuff like that. And like in that moment, I was like, oh man, where people make good points. You know, like there's Ben Shapiro's who make good points and I'll find a good bit about that. But I'm not going to watch fucking hours and hours of Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
talking like this really fast and...
You know, like, give me a 3-minute highlight reel and then I'm good. I'll get the material out of that.
You're so like me, though. Like, I'm always looking for the shortcuts, you know, because I think, oh, I can't spend 3 hours doing this and three hours doing that.
With the political correctness stuff, it's not just affecting comedians. I mean, like, you look at Jordan Peterson and every opportunity they go to try to cut him down, it's...
Yeah.
You know, where he's making pretty good points.
Very good points.
Yeah.
I bought his book.
Yeah, I bought his book as well. And Kitty Flanagan's, just to even out the universe, you know what I mean?
Apparently, he's quite sick at the moment.
Didn't he have the keto diet where he ate nothing but meat?
No, that just was a carnivore, but it wasn't carnivore. To do with that. Because he was suffering something before.
No, but I think he did that diet to combat sickness.
Yeah, he did.
And then I think that sickness overran him.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Because his daughter was pretty sick. She was on the podcast too. Not mine.
Yeah. But fuck, who don't you know, Wayne?
Yeah. Damn. How does tours get booked? Do you need a manager? Like, how does that all work here in Australia?
I've got a few people that look after me and stuff, but I'm not on anyone's books yet. My theory is kind of like I need to have chips to go into the casino. And at the moment, I'm still just working on gathering up those chips. So, you know, like you need like a... At the end of the day, man, it's like, how do I sell you? At the moment, I'm trying to make that easier for them to figure out.
Well, there's a few things you can do.
Yeah.
YouTube. Podcasts.
Yeah, but it all comes down to procrastination again.
Yeah, Sean, you got to stop that.
I know. You think I should give it up?
Time's precious, mate.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
there's so many YouTube clips out there.
People are dying every... Yeah, but you are you.
No, I'm talking about I'm watching them.
Sean, come on.
I've been watching this dude called Legal Eagle about where he talks about legal issues in movies.
Yeah.
Like court cases like My Cousin Vinny, and then he gives a mark of realism.
Oh, really?
And has no bearing on what I'm going to do ever in life, but it's fucking...
It's entertaining.
It's entertaining.
That's the problem with YouTube. Yeah. Like, you'll go on for one thing, and 2 hours later, you still haven't got to that.
Man, I watched about an hour of how the knuckleball works in Major League Baseball.
That's YouTube, though. Yeah. It is interesting. Do you think you need an audience for that energy to whip up your intuition in comedy, or can you put a camera in front of you and do something? Who's the other Aussie comic that has a YouTube channel? First, and then from his YouTube channel that exploded, he's got the big beard. He's now doing Australian.
Oh, yeah, Isaac Butterfield.
Butterfield, yeah. I think he started from YouTube, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I did open mics with him in Newcastle.
Yeah. Well, I think his chips had come from YouTube.
Yeah.
He's a great, I look at Isaac because he brings up some great points, you know.
Well, that's definitely the chips that I'm talking about. But I'm pretty sure Isaac Butterfield's still not signed because there's still that political air of things, you know.
Yeah.
I don't really know Isaac that well, but he does talk about a lot of problematic. You know, those jokes are problematic. If you don't get the joke, that's the problematic part of it. And then that's where it fucking ends.
Yeah.
But man, I really don't know how that shit works. But, you know, you just...
Yeah.
Let you know when I'm signed.
Man, it's a different ballgame, though.
Yeah.
Like, talking to a camera for YouTube is a completely different ballgame to standing in front of, you know, 400 people doing stand-up. Different format, but I think it's the way to get your sort of publicity and get the public eye on you, not just in Australia but around the world.
Well, I think with the YouTube stuff, especially with Isaac Butterfield, I'll just use Isaac as an example. You know, like, he would go out and do a 50-seater or 100 200 seater in Newcastle and get that immediate, you know, I do boom boom tss, and then you get that immediate reaction of whether it's good or not. With the YouTube stuff, I think you got to really know the analytics and stuff like that of like how many likes shit it's getting and
what to understand how
whether it's good or not, you know. And then you get like 100,000 views on one video and then you get 10,000 on one video, and it's just like, well, I really like that 10,000 view video. Like, what am I missing that these people aren't liking?
Yeah. Well, unless you do Instagram, you do like minute-long segments.
Yeah.
So the other thing I was going to ask is, so you organized the tour yourself when you went to the States?
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you do that?
You know, there's like Facebook groups, you know, Atlanta comedy, you know, Las Vegas comedy, LA comedy. If you got friends in those cities, they'll be like, yeah, man, come to my gig or come to my gig. But I didn't know anyone in Vegas and Atlanta, so I just hit the Facebook groups. And then California, I had my mate Ari tee that up for me.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's friends and contacts and yeah. who you know sort of yeah. a thing.
But whether they like you and stuff as well is another.
I think that's the biggest part of it, hey?
Yeah.
Whether they can get along with you and have a drink with you and think, you know, this guy's genuine.
Yeah.
He's yeah. not, you know, he's not wanting to suck me dry. Is the comedy different in the US to it is in Australia? And if so, how?
No, it's hard to say because it's, you know, it's such an individual pursuit, you know what I mean? So like good comedians in Australia and the UK and the US.
Similar.
Not even, I wouldn't say similar, but they're just good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
UK is very different. It's quite a dry sense of, not dry, but it's a different type of humour. Even their shows,
yeah.
still funny,
yeah,
but in a different way. I think the US and Australia are pretty similar. What did Jim Jefferies done pretty well over there.
But he also based a lot of his comedy in the UK as well. So he spent 15 years in the UK.
Before. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just all stagecraft and stuff and how to push your message. And then that's where you define what's good. You know, like there's good comedians that are like deadpan. And then there are
yeah.
shit comedians that are great storytellers. You know, like yeah. it's weird.
Yeah.
So there's
you just got to find your groove, hey?
Yeah. But I think as far as like the business aspect, I think the US and UK are far superior to like the Australian comedy scene. Yeah.
Do you think we're getting there?
Well, we're always moving forward, but it feels pretty slow. But then I might just be bitter because they haven't signed me yet. So.
So once you get signed, is that in the comedy world, is that pretty much your ticket? Like, I'm going to get gigs. It's just now I've just got to work on the material going.
Well, that's what I kind of think it is. At the moment, I'm working on my shows and working the shows and, like, I'm doing 100% of the work.
Yeah.
Where I think management just takes the administrative side of comedy off your shoulders.
Right.
So you can focus on the comedy. And they book your corporate gigs and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to do any more MMA?
I'm thinking about it, man.
Oh, really?
I'm going to be,
got the bug, have we?
It's always fun throwing your hands around.
Well, it's also when you have motivation because you know you're going to step into a ring where the other guy's trying to kill you. There's no greater motivation to get fit.
Yeah. I don't think it was even that. For me, it was just to say that I could make weight. That was the fight for me at the start was to make weight for the fight. And then after that, I got knocked out in 90 seconds. So it was like...
You got knocked out?
TKO'd.
Yeah, how?
Yeah. Well, he got me on my back. And then in amateurs, if they punch you 5 clear times in the head, then it's like an automatic TKO. So he hit me out of the 5 times. He hit me once that really shook me. But the other times, it was just like...
Should have made him laugh, Sean. Should have given him one of your jokes.
I did afterwards. I compared him like... You know, I think I said, why the fuck are you putting me in the ring with Tom Hardy from Warrior and shit like that? And he's just looking at me like, what the fuck wrong with you, man?
So the MMA training you did.
Yeah.
How many days
so did you train? So that was Monday to Friday, 5:30 to 7 in the morning.
Wow.
Every day. Yeah. Then I had work commitments and I fell on my shoulder playing dodgeball and was out for a month with that.
So... If you can get fucking disciplined doing that,
yeah,
5:30 in the morning to 7, surely you can write some material and get something up on. Yeah. I mean, where's the procrastination
I'm selling myself like I'm the most unmotivated person in the world. I'm getting other shit done, Wayne.
Well, you have a bit of a legacy now, as in you have made a name in comedy.
I suppose.
I've spoken to a few people. There's a guy in that sells vape stuff. He's got a vape shop and he knew you. Yeah. And because he said, oh, Wayne, you know, who have you got coming on your podcast? I said, oh, I've got this guy. He's a stand-up comic. His name's Sean Conway. He goes, I know Sean Conway. Seen some of his stuff. And yeah, I know Sean Conway. Give me a link to the podcast. So here's a complete stranger
Or it might be one of my cousins. You
that
don't
knows
know.
Who you, that knows who you are.
Yeah.
So you're doing something right. And you got to be pretty proud of the journey. Like, I still see you getting physically sick, trying to talk to 20 people.
Yeah.
And you're now performing stand-up comedy in front of, like, hundreds. To me, it's like somebody that is afraid of heights and gets a job as a window cleaner on skyscrapers or gets in a jumpsuit and starts flying. Like, I just, that contrast, that polar end contrast of what you've done is an amazing story in itself.
This is what I don't like, is that, like, patting yourself on the back.
No, it's not, you know what it's I mean? Not like, it's, no, but I can pay you.
Yeah, but
like you can't. You no, can't pay yourself.
But I was kind of like, well, fuck, if you like what you're saying so far, Wayne, like, wait till, you know, like another 5 years down the track. Well, that's kind of where my head's
the point
at.
Is you're always going to get better.
Yeah.
And it's a never ending. And the trick is to just keep doing it and you keep doing it and you keep doing it. It's not about the success of it. It's whether you enjoy doing it.
No, it's 100% about the money, Wayne. I don't know who you've fucking been talking to. It's all about the money.
It's all about the money.
Yeah, I'm looking at buying a new van because I do a lot of setting my own gigs up and stuff. It's the Ford Transit 2020 van.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you seen those? Yeah. But I want to get the basic one so I can get a red spoiler on the back and have like the red deck hole down the side and make it look like a real A-team van.
Like it could be a campaign van for Sean Conway.
Well, yeah.
You know what you should do, Sean?
Well, that was a show I had and then someone else did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was going to be called Let's Get This Party Started. And it was me starting my own political party and going around touring and doing gigs as like political speech and stuff like that.
Here's something new. Hook up the big speakers on the top of the roof and do like drive-through comedy. Like, you're just driving through the streets and you're doing comedy as you're driving.
Like the Muay Thai fighters in Thailand.
Oh, did they do it? No.
You never saw that?
No.
Lady and gentlemen, boy and girl, please come to Muay Thai fight on, you know?
Oh, that's that what's promoting
the promotion.
Fight.
Yeah.
No.
You never saw those?
Dude, drive-through comedy, man. Screw the stand-up.
Just drive-through crowd work?
Yeah.
Hey, what do you do for a living?
So I was going to get, because I know you that you wrote a show about your mother.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So my mum got pretty sick. And so I wrote the whole show as kind of, writing the show actually terrified me, you know, because I was thinking, fuck, this is going to be like my nanette and shit, you know, it's going to be all sad and miserable and stuff. Like more of a storytelling show. And then I had the first night of Fringe. I still tried to make it a punchy and stuff, but I had family, cousins and friends that I grew up with come to the first show and they all started heckling me at like emotional parts of the fucking show.
On purpose or?
Oh, definitely on purpose. Yeah. Oh, you know, like Chich would had an empty beer bottle and was like, how long's left? And I'm like, are you fucking serious? And then he started blowing into his beer bottle, you know, where you go. It sucked, but it also opened my eyes to like that's not the sort of comedy that I do. So I'm still working on the show, but it's going to be more like what I do.
How do you make something as tragic as your mother being sick into comedy?
Make it uncomfortable and then you burst the bubble.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get the crowd uncomfortable with the story and the tragedy of what's happening.
I mean,
and how do you burst that bubble?
Just by lying. You know, like you start with truth and then to make it funny, you just add lies to it.
Right.
That's the recipe.
That's the recipe.
Like my mum was sick and she was, you know, she would say, I love you to the moon and back. You know, when she was like very weak and stuff like that. I love you to the moon and back, which, you know, really made me appreciate like my mum didn't really know me as a son. You know, because if there's one thing that I hate, it's plagiarism, you know, because it's a Dolly Parton song. Yeah.
Hey, that must have worked.
Yeah. But that's kind of like how you fill it out. But, and just honest truths, man, comparing.
But you just said that it's not the sort of comedy that you do or you're known for.
Well, look at Ari Shaffir, right? You know, everyone's talking about the sad side of the Kobe Bryant incident. He was trying to find the funny side of it. And that's kind of like what I'm doing with this show. So, like, I'm not really focusing on the stuff that makes me upset. It's more, what can I do with this content, if that makes sense? So this is the material, like this is the event that happened. Now how do I put my spin and my style and make the comedy out of it?
Did your mother find out about what you were doing?
About the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't that keen, but yeah, she backed me enough to get it done. And a lot of her nurses all came down and SKG people came down. So like, my mum had a really big effect on the people there because she is like a really nice lady. I don't know where I get my evil streak from. But
you're a nice guy, Sean.
Oh, whatever, mate.
You're a marshmallow that does MMA and stand-up.
Well, that's not how I'll describe myself.
You're a beast.
Yeah.
So I've heard that you actually do a bit of charity too. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
This is something I'm kind of proud of. It's but it's still a lot of work to do. I run a gig called Canned Comedy, which is set up in Perth, Mandurah, Darwin and Palmerston, and hopefully this year get it set up in Adelaide and Melbourne. And the entry fee is a can of food for Food Bank WA.
Good idea.
So, yeah, so we've raised, last time I checked, 26,000 meals.
Wow.
So, yeah. So hopefully we can
That's
great. It's good, but there's also a lot of work to do. So I think once that really gets established in every state and territory, I think there's going to be a nice little product there for everyone to enjoy. So it's all world-class comedians that come and do it. Like our February show had like Chopper, Heath Franklin's Chopper, Dilrick, who literally just got voted off the Jungle and then came and did Canned Comedy. Yeah, Sam Taunton, who's been on the project and stuff. Troy Hawke, who's, you know, award-winning comedian, and plus a lot of local sellout acts. And we did that. We raised over 2,000 meals. If I can get it set up everywhere, I think it'll be just a nice product.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
It also makes it accessible to everyone. You know what I mean?
That's
so
right.
Like, even if you are using the services of Food Bank around Australia, you can still come and see the world-class comedy and also be part of the solution.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You should get some press on that.
Yeah, I should.
You should.
And an Australian of the Year nomination if you're listening.
Yeah, we'll put this out.
This is my campaign for Australian of the Year. That's why I'm doing all these podcasts and fringe shows and everything.
What was the moment where you decided to do that? Was it about your mum? Or was it something completely different?
No, this is before my mum got sick. It just needed to be done. You know, because I grew up in government housing and stuff, and I've seen people that needed the services. And I tried doing it with another charity, and they saw my comedy on YouTube and was like, no, we don't really want to be associated with that sort of comedy. So I was kind of like, well, fuck you then, man. Like, how can you know?
You're doing something for charity.
Yeah, but like, it was like, our Christian message goes again. You know, I was also like, how fucking dumb Christians are and shit like that.
So the charity's doing okay?
Yeah, I think Food Bank Victoria and Food Bank New South Wales were really under the pump the start of this year with all the bushfires and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think things are starting to go back pretty steady. But one thing they do that I really appreciate, because people, it's weird, people get like insecure about handing in like baked beans and cans of spaghetti, thinking, oh, like this is like the worst canned food you can give. But it's like, it's one of the better ones because Food Bank does a lot of before school programs, which, you know, less fortunate families and the kids go there and they get like a breakfast and stuff like that. So
why did you say the spaghetti and I don't get it? The spaghetti and baked beans is...
Oh, so like audience members come and they're just like, oh, sorry, we only brought like baked bean and spaghetti.
Mm.
But it's like, that's like one of the better things you can get.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But like everything counts, you know, and Food Bank tries to make... It's seasonal, you know, like in winter, they like a lot of soups and stuff like that. Literally whatever you can contribute, it all counts to the bigger cause.
When it comes to causes and you, I noticed that your back went up a bit about the social justice. What pisses Sean Conway off the most?
Oh, it's all nonsense, man. It's all nonsense.
What is?
One, I don't think you should have a hard opinion. Do you remember Dogma?
Yeah.
You know, like it's better to have ideas. Yeah. You know, Rufus, the 13th apostle.
Yeah, yeah.
I've kind of tried to live by that mantra. Like I'm not religious in any sense or anything like that, but 100% committed to any idea is really your downfall. I mean, whether you're Israel Folau or, you know.
True.
Some fucking vegan stealing calves and shit.
If you can...
I mean, that's the saddest fucking thing I've ever seen. Like, I've got friends that are vegan, but, like, they're not skinny crusaders, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's almost like, you know, when people quit smoking, they become those reformist smokers, you know, like, why can you smoke? How can you smoke? And it's like, you know, whatever makes your life better.
A stranger leadism.
Yeah. But, you know, like you said, I think there was a saying instead of debating and talking about what can change the world, just be the man who does that.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They're all talking about what the problem with the world is, but they're not making any
difference
effort. You know, one of the most, like the climate change debate, and you've got people with glitter signs saying the world's going to end on cardboard that came from trees that were cut down. Like, it's just a real bunch of hypocrisy. And it's just like, speaking of that, I've got some shit on the gender pay gap and all that shit as well. I had one joke that really got me in trouble with that.
Go on. I love it.
So the joke was about how, there's like of course there's a gender pay gap. You know, women do dumb jobs. And then I'll let the crowd sort of mellow in that for a little bit, and you can just see the tension and shit. And then it's like, how many male tarot card readers do you know? And then they're kind of like, I guess that's fucking true.
It's so obscure that it's funny.
Yeah, but it's also weird is that, and that goes into like, there's only one type of person that gets offended in this world, straight white women. And it's like, where are my straight white women at? Make some noise. And there's no noise. And it's just like, see, they're already offended. But, you know, and they talk about like...
But you know what? The more of this sort of social justice stuff that's happening, it's probably better for comedians. You know, if things like this was not being said, half the material that comedians are doing today.
Well, my number one issue is identity politics. You know what I mean? Like it's... Like,
that's what Jordan Peterson talks a lot about.
Yeah, it's just I'm a lot of things, but I'm not defined by those things, if that makes sense. You know, like the individual matters. You know, you can be an a trans, vegan, black person, all in the one person. But if you're a piece of shit, then like you're not going to get respect. Right. You know what I mean? Like it's just people are fucking animals, man.
You know, a bunch of friends of mine went to do the protest, you know, about global, you know, the climate change and things. I often say, because I just had enough. And
commies, you're commie mates.
Yeah, well, I'm not a denier or anything, but no. I'm from the point of view that I think it's time for another species, a more evolved species that doesn't fight over property or money or religion or war. You know, we've only been here, 250,000 years? We've destroyed most of it. I just personally don't think humans should keep going. And the fact is that they're protesting not to save the planet. They're protesting so the planet can be more sustainable so they can live in it. So I posed one question and I said, will the planet Earth be better off with humans or without? It's without humans. It will flourish.
There's a couple that can hang around, but I reckon there's a bunch that we could cull out.
Yeah, I do. Do you want to say who?
Man, I've got a list in my phone.
You know, I was talking about this yesterday. And I was just being, it was with family. And they're like, Wayne, you can't say that. And I said, I'm just joking. I don't mean it.
Well, what'd you say? No, what'd you say? Fuck off. You made me say the gender pay gap shit. You know, and I'll tell you what, this going back to like the feminist stuff, you know what annoys me the most about feminists where they talk about the workplace and all that stuff? None of them ever talk about the number one threat to like female jobs, and that's automation. They never talk about automation.
Well, automation's it's
coming for all our fucking jobs.
My wife is in the AI automation for BHP, but she is interested in the technology of where and how it can help to save lives in that way.
Yeah, kind of like Skynet.
Yeah, yeah, but safer.
Yeah, where the machines that's are what nice. They thought as
where
well.
The machines are nice, Sean.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger coming and cooking your dinner.
Yeah, until there's a T-3000 of your missus coming out and killing John Connor and shit.
But if they're sexy as fuck, who cares, Sean?
Well, like T3.
Yeah, in that red leather jumpsuit. Oh, bring on AI.
Fuck yeah.
Bring on AI.
You can get them now, can't you?
Well, hey, how's this?
I think there's actually New Zealand. I think it's New Zealand. Or it might just be assuming that it's New Zealand. They've got that sex doll brothel.
No. Let me tell you. Yeah, you're right. I brought that up. Do you know that the first sponsor that contacted me for the podcast show was the latest technology in sex dolls?
Yeah.
And I sort of said to them, I said, look, I'm honored you called, you know, I've only done five.
Yeah.
However, I'm trying to attract guests at the moment that are from all walks of life. You know, I had on Heart, they do the emergency donors.
Yeah.
I've got female authors coming on, and I've got a whole pile of, like, I've got a priest coming
if
on.
If anyone needs a sex doll, it's those female writers, you know what I mean?
The writers, yeah. They write about them. And I sort of said, you know, it'd be hard to start the show by, and this podcast is brought to you by, and I'm not going to say the name, but I sort of said to them, look, I'm appreciative. Maybe if I did like a red light show at the end of the night.
Also, you don't want your house stacked with sex dolls as like parting gifts for your guest.
Why not, man? I wouldn't give them away.
No, but like, I mean, it's like gifts, you know.
I could have a solo party.
The rubbiest orgy of all time.
You can come tell jokes, be a laugh. Especially if the dolls can laugh on cue.
Like that Stephen Hawking laugh?
Yeah.
I would only have a sex doll if I had Stephen Hawking's voice.
Stephen Hawking's loved strippers, did you know?
Yeah, he was on Epstein's Island as well.
No.
Yeah, there's photos of him on Epstein's Island.
No.
100%.
Really?
Yeah.
On pedophile fuck island?
Yeah.
Jeez, isn't that a crime, hey? Jeffrey Epstein. It goes all the way up the ladder.
Yeah, well, do you reckon he's dead?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
I think they murdered him. Well, you think they got rid of him?
I don't know, man. This world's a fucked up place, I reckon. Is it that absurd to think that they just let him go back to what they do for a debt? Do you remember Lords of War? Remember the last scene in Lords of War where Nicolas Cage is just like, you think you've got me. You know, you think you've got me, but you're going to get a call.
He knew a lot of powerful people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't put it past that. I don't know if they've released pictures of the autopsy or anything, but
they had that whole thing where there was that investigation that said that he was killed by a piano wire and not you know what I mean, like that proper like assassin wire.
By that guerrilla cellmate that he had, ex-cop.
Well, because they said that he hung himself with
the blanket, the sheets.
But there was no blood or resonance to suggest that it was, and that's about as much as I've looked into it. Like. Pedophile Island, it's not something I usually YouTube.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe he's selling T-shirts outside Madison Square Garden in a disguise.
But I'll tell you what, maybe in 20 years' time, Pedo Island could be the new Temptation Island. Like the worst reality TV series ever.
With high-tech sex doll. Sean, we should get into that, man. We should get into celebrity sex dolls.
You can cut this out, but do you remember you want to do that adult film
stuff? No, there was something before that, because one of my previous jobs back in the day was I was at Concierge, and we used to get all these rich, you know, tourists coming through that were gamblers. I think they were called junkets and stuff, and they were requesting certain girls. So when I first started in this 5-star hotel, they would give me a list of places that we have contracts with.
Yeah.
And the amount of money that was going through, and we didn't get anything.
Yeah.
So I just thought, well, if you had an organization with a bunch of drivers where you could make it safe for the girls, and yet they strictly just work with the casino.
Yeah.
Well, it's happening anyway. I just wanted to, you know, we were getting nothing.
You just wanted a piece of the pie. I wanted a piece of the pie.
It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I think because of insurance was just skyrocketed and stuff. Yeah. It was just too much. But, yeah, that was
– Pimpin' ain't easy. Man,
that was a long time ago.
Pimpin' ain't easy.
Yeah. So, listen, what's next for Sean Conway?
I'm off to Adelaide with my show 100%. That's the one about my mum, but it's – it's a lot tighter now after Perth Fringe, but like 100% of the doors still going to charity. And then I'm off to Newcastle and then maybe Darwin. Just do a bunch of fringes this year, get the show really tight, and then smash it out at festivals next year.
Right. And for the Perth listeners, are you doing anything in Perth coming up?
Just Can Comedy. First Wednesday of the month in Perth and the first Sunday of the month in Mandurah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have dates for that? Or is it every month?
I think the 1st and the 4th of March is the next one.
And where can they check you out online?
All my socials is Total Conway.
Total Conway.
Total Conway.
Man, I'm so proud of you, and I think there's going to be great things to come.
I reckon we start this podcast again and get back. We should have just started off talking about sex robots and Jeffrey Epstein and stuff.
Sex robots that look like Jeffrey Epstein.
That's probably one. Hillary Clinton practiced on.
Well, if that's your type, you know, you could have a Hillary Clinton one and, you know.
Well, didn't he have a Bill Clinton painting where he was naked and or like in a dress?
Well, Bill Clinton was on that plane 27 times.
Yeah.
The Pedophile Express.
Now, what was it? It was the Kubrick movie.
Are you talking about Eyes Wide Shut?
No, no, Selena. It was like about the story of a guy that like was infatuated with a young girl. And then they named the plane after that.
Lolita? Yeah, yeah. Lolita. It's a good
book. Was that Kubrick?
Man, I don't know. I thought it was Kubrick. But it was a great book. I read that book and because of the apparently the writing style of it, the guy got nominated and he was up for, prize. But I think that you're going to go pretty big. Otherwise, I wouldn't have called you on.
Well, I was a bit worried because I was on a night shift last night coming off the Fringe run, so I've been pretty cooked. So that's probably why I was mumbling at the start. But I got sassed out by like a McDonald's employee this morning because I got that new McChicken burger, you know, with like all the jalapenos and shit. And he goes, "Oh, you the guy that ordered off the lunch menu at breakfast time?" And I just like, "Yeah, fuck." Like he was like just weirdly fronting me over. I just thought, just give me my fucking burger, bitch. Stop fucking. I've worked for 8 hours at a real fucking job. Just fucking.
What time did you finish?
6.
This morning.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, and then I woke up at like 2.
There is a weird thing when you do night shift.
I love it.
You know, the 11 at night till 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
Apparently, what started to happen is a lot of guys driving home would just start getting the worst hard-ons in the car.
Yeah.
And they just didn't know what was going on. And it happens to everyone that's on night shift.
Yeah,
and
but that might also just be a bunch of creeps at like the public toilets and it's like the cop is pulling them over. Like, what are you doing here? And it's like, oh, sorry, man, I was on night shift.
Well, yeah, they go to the public toilet. I'm just talking about driving home, Sean.
Well, who the fuck's doing the statistic if it's not for the fucking creeps in the public toilets?
But apparently it's like, like Morning Glory. It's the similar thing. It's that body clock that happens.
Just the endorphins of finishing in a hard day's work.
Yeah, it's that reward. And you just can't wait to get home. Like, whoa, yeah, 100 miles an hour.
Absolutely punish that sex robot.
Yeah, we're not up to that standard yet. I think the ones we're talking about will be on Black Mirror eventually.
What, you reckon there'll be like an AI pig or something?
Well, no, there'll be like
this. Wasn't that what they tried doing? They tried creating the AI pig for that dog, first episode?
The one with the robotic dog that looks like the Boston Dynamics robotics. It's the black and white one and it's set in the future. And it's where they go, this group of people go to steal something from a warehouse and it's guarded by this robotic dog that can fire bullets. And it's scary as hell.
I might have to watch that when I get home.
Because it's so real from the shit you've seen on YouTube that they're actually doing, like the dogs opening doors and stuff. And these are dogs with AI in them.
Yeah.
And you just can't destroy them. So I think...
No, you send the videos of them trying to, like, you just boot them over and they get back up.
That was debunked. That was fake.
Well, them kicking the dogs over.
Yeah, and they're going to try and pull the gun on it and, you know, and they're kicking it. Or are you talking about...
No, the Boston Dynamics?
I know the one you were talking about. There was another one where they got the dog was fighting back and they were trying to boot this dog over and point a gun at it and this dog...
Apparently it was some 4chan shit that you've been getting deep into.
Yeah, it was debunked as these special effects.
No, I'm talking about like the promo videos where they're trying to close the door and like the dog's ripping it open still. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're coming for our jobs, man.
Well,
they're coming for us.
Stand-up comedy, they're going to have AI robots doing stand-up and they're going to tap into all the comics going back to the early 20th century and they can read the crowd because... their face recognition of all the crowd and instantaneously exactly what they like, what humour they like, and they'll just be targeting that audience.
No, I think it'll be more like the 2-pack hologram. You get like George Carlin up
there.
You get
great, man. That was great.
Yeah, just a lineup of that. It would be a Vegas show because, like, why the fuck would you not want to go to Vegas and see George Carlin?
Richard Pryor.
Yeah. Probably not Lenny Bruce. He's a bit dated now.
I reckon Eddie Murphy's going to come back.
He is coming back.
No, in movies, but I reckon he's coming back.
No, he's got a stand-up special.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he got offered like $60 million from Netflix.
See, Sean, what's happening with you, man? Why aren't you getting offered the $60 million bounty?
You know, politics.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Thanks, brother.
All right, cheers, brother.
See you, man. Cheers.